Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. But we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's so good to be back. And I can already tell I have to bring it down a notch, or the pipes are not going to make it through the full hour. Yeah, my pipes are under a lot of strain lately. A lot of verbosity in my life, and so I got to take it easy. Could you go make some chamomile tea with a little honey, perhaps? You know what I really need, though, is chocolate. Chocolate always helps. If you ever have to go and do public speaking, or if you ever have to talk for any extended period of time, a large chunk of chocolate right before always helps. But we'll try to get through it, folks. It's good to have you back. I've been making notes. I know I've been away for a while, and I'm so thrilled to be back. Actually, I'm not really that thrilled to be back on the show. I'm just thrilled to be back here at the McBurney compound. I had a conversation with some younger folks that I work with, and they love to travel. They love it. They absolutely love it. And I told them, I said, well, I live in paradise with people who love me and who I love, so I never want to leave. I don't think they really could comprehend that. I don't think they're able to comprehend that. And perhaps when I was 20, 25, maybe I couldn't comprehend it either. It's possible. So anyway, hopefully they come around at some point in the not-too-distant future. But what do we want to talk about? There's so much stuff. We have 5 new chickens here at the McBurney compound. And the duck is broody. How many eggs are under the duck? 10, 12? 12 eggs under the duck, so we'll see how that goes. That could be quite the take there. Wow. 12 ducks. That we would go from 3 ducks to 15 ducks virtually. But you never get them all, so you never get them all. And so we'll see how that goes. Welcome back, everybody. It's so good. I'm glad you've tuned in. I hope my throat makes it through this. Anyway, I've been making notes as I've been gallivanting around and doing whatever it is I do to earn a living, which is not this show, I can assure you of that. So, but we don't do this for money, we do this for love. Yes, the Starbucks arrest. I have all these post-it notes that I've gathered. The black fellas who were arrested at the Starbucks, that looks like a setup to me. Here's the thing. And I've done this too. Have you ever been out? I'm on the road a lot. I drive around a lot. And so sometimes you just got to pee. And you don't need to buy anything. You've already got coffee. You've already got gas. But you just really got to go. And so I'll make a confession. Now, one thing I never do is I never loiter around a Starbucks without buying a cup of coffee. I don't do that. But sometimes I act like I'm on the phone and I walk into a 7-Eleven and I act like I'm giving someone directions to meet me there, and then I go to the bathroom and then I leave. So I will admit that I do that.
I never heard that.
That's, I know. Well, it's fundamentally dishonest, I suppose. But I have done, I shouldn't say I do that. I'll just say I have done that at least once in the past. But anyway, the fellas at Starbucks, here's the thing. If you're loitering around a Starbucks, and I know what it's like to be low on cash, and you got to meet somebody. Starbucks is great. They got free internet. But when the store manager comes up and asks you, are you going to buy something, you just have to buy something, right? Isn't that? That's what we call civilization. You don't just say, no, we're just going to sit here and wait for our friend. Start a confrontation about it. Anyway, that's old news anyways. What else? I have a note here about Comey and Hillary. Dem, Republican. I have no idea what this even means. Comey-Hillary, Fall Guys, Dem, Repub. I have no idea what these notes. Some of these notes I write in the middle of the night. I have no idea what they mean. I do want to announce a small victory on the part of the, what would you call it? I guess you just call us the conservative community here in Colorado. On the anniversary of Columbine, which I believe was April 20th, on the anniversary of Columbine, the local news reported that at Columbine, 13 were killed. And they didn't say 15. And so that's one small victory for those of us who stood up at the time when the news media started saying, including the murderers in the body count. So one small victory there that I wanted to report. Last night, actually I've been keeping track, about five times in the past 10 days on the local news, there's been report of a police shooting, and the officers involved are on routine leave. They're on, what do they call it? Routine leave. Administrative leave. And I just wonder how long it will be till there will be some summer weekend in a major metropolitan area where every cop is on administrative leave because he was involved in a shooting within the last week or whatever. And how long? Statistically, eventually it has to happen. Every police officer is on administrative leave trying to hold back the flood of violent crime engulfing the streets of every major metropolitan city in America. So it'll probably be a little while, but it could happen. Statistically, it has to happen at some point. The teacher walkout. I made this note almost 3 weeks ago on this big teacher walkout, not realizing it would still be news 3 weeks later. The teachers all over the country are whining and complaining. They say they have to buy the children resources to teach them. You hear this from the teacher? So here's another thing about the teachers. All right, first of all, I don't grovel to teachers. I don't consider them heroes. I remember most of my teachers were relative misfits. Relatively speaking, they were misfits, most of them. There were a few shining stars who you could tell actually loved to teach and were actually competent in what they did. But most of them were, they could never make it in the real world. You know, they'd be killed and eaten. But the big teacher walkout, they did an interview earlier in the week here in Denver. And the teacher they interviewed had three studs in her nose, one on each side, one in the middle. And she had the ear grommets, the gauges. She had the gauges go. This is a teacher. Tattoo. She had a tattoo sticking out between her collarbone there, right in her chest. Right at the sternal notch there. She's got the wing of a demon sticking up through. You could see it through her shirt. Yeah. Yeah, it was like something off the cover of the Molly Hatchet album sticking up. Anyway. I honestly am starting to think that the local news is actually designed to desensitize people to the freaks. Because, you know, you're not allowed to say something. You're standing in line and someone comes up beside you and half their head is shaved and they've got full sleeve tattoos and all kinds of ornaments in their face and eyebrows and nose and you're not allowed to say anything. You're supposed to act like that's normal. And anyway, we teach our kids to make fun of people like that. Yeah, well, not right to their face where they might start a fight or something, but afterwards, you know, we like to compare the freaks that we saw in town. Yeah, but why is it that on the local news, every time they interview someone, they're a tatted up, pierced freak? An apartment fire happens, they interview someone, they're a tatted-up freak. It's a robbery at a local liquor store, the witnesses are all tatted-up, pierced freaks. Teachers march, demanding higher pay, they have to interview a tatted-up, pierced freak. Why is that? I mean, maybe it's just that civilization is really just crawling with all kinds of freaks. That could be. Although my extremely attractive audio engineer, she did point out something to me that I had not realized. is that you don't see too many tatted up Pierce freaks at the airport. I had never noticed that, but I started since I heard that, started making a mental note. You just don't see very many. I guess they don't travel beyond the, I don't know, motorcycle range or whatever. You don't see them at the airport for whatever reason. All right. So the teachers are marching, and they're basically admitting that the government running education does not work, is basically what they're admitting. They say they have to buy their children resources, and they have to buy them pencils and rulers and all that stuff. They have to buy that out of their own meager salaries. These poor teachers having to lay out $10, $15 a month on pencils, erasers, pepper spray, things that they need to teach the kids. And I saw one sign out at the Denver Capitol at the big teachers' walkout. By the way, why do they all have the commie fist? Are you guys familiar with the commie fist? It goes way, way back. I think it goes back to Lenin himself, the fist. The upraised fist on the poster, right? Have you seen that? You know, that is a well-known communist symbol. A symbol that has been held aloft in communist marches for 100 years. And the teachers' signs at the march, at least here in Denver, a significant plurality of the signs held aloft at the Denver Capitol by the teachers, all the misfits, had the commie fist. And one of them I saw said, "If you want something done, you have to do it yourself." I said, "If you want something done, you have to do it yourself." That was held up by a teacher, implying that, she's just complaining that she has to buy her students school supplies. If you want something done, you have to do it yourself. She just proves my point. Why not just cut out the middleman and homeschool our children? Which we did. We've done that all of our children's entire academic career has been spent outside the government school pop culture complex. Yeah, well, you've heard of the military industrial complex and the warnings. I believe it was Dwight Eisenhower who warned against building up a government, an industrial, come on, kids, say it, a military-industrial complex. Well, and there is a certain danger there, but there's a bigger danger in allowing your children to be raised by the pop culture government school complex, or maybe I'll say pop culture public school complex, just because it rolls more easily off the tongue. Just get out. I agree with the teachers. If you want something done right, you have to do it yourself, and that's what we're doing, and that's why... Well, they're not allowed to teach our kids, that's all. No chocolate? No chamomile? No? My extremely attractive audio engineer. She had to step out of the studio. She had to find something to keep herself awake, something to read. Okay. But she's back here in the studio, just so nobody be concerned. What else do we have? We've got Bill Cosby. Of course, I have to speak to the Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby was found guilty, you know. So here's the thing. As bothered as I am by people making accusations that are 20 and 30 years old, 10 years old, 15 years old, that bothers me. Probably just in a legalistic sense. I'm probably just being legalistic. Because when you have 60 of them, 60-some-odd women, and they all tell the same story about Bill Cosby and the Quaaludes and the glass, and I woke up, and you got to figure there's some... forget two or three witnesses. Two or three dozen witnesses, you start to think, well, it's a shame, too. When I was a kid, my mom would not let me buy George Carlin records, but she would let me buy Bill Cosby records. Because Bill Cosby didn't work blue. He wasn't dirty, see? So I actually grew up listening to 78 RPM records of Bill Cosby. And now we find out that Well, here's the thing. If you go all the way back to the beginning of Bill Cosby's career in the early 1960s, when the whole free love, sexual liberation movement began, so, I mean, all you Me Too women, what did you think? Did you think that you could allow legal pornography and sexual liberation, free love and the hippie thing and all that? Did you think you could allow that and that you would end up with anything but an environment in which you're abused and violated by predators? Is that what you thought you could do? Because let's face it, the whole idea of free love and sexual promiscuity, that's not a woman's idea. It's not women that came up with that. It was men who came up with that. But it was women who decided to tolerate it. And now their collective gag reflex, a generation later, as they see their granddaughters being molested, they're freaking out. So, well, some of us have been telling you from the very beginning that you just can't have that. In fact, not only can you not have rampant ubiquitous pornography and free love and no-fault divorce and all of that, not only can you not have that, you cannot even have adultery and fornication be legal. And I know it's a shocking thing to say that adultery and fornication should be illegal, but if we had never crossed that Rubicon, all these women would not have been abused. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. And so I think we've settled all that. But anyway, for all of the Me Too gals out there, when your mothers and grandmothers accepted the idea of legal pornography, free love, the sexual revolution, they basically what they did was they condemned themselves and their daughters to all this abuse that's being vomited out. Tom Brokaw now accused. Tom Brokaw, even. Anyway, it's basically everyone in every profession at every level is doing all kinds of horrible sexually immoral things, and eventually society just has to vomit it out, and that's what we're going through. But the sad part is it's going to be like a heroin addict. Once all the vomit and retching is over, then it's going to be worse than it was before. That's what I'm afraid of. Because there really has been no national repentance. There's been no call to a higher authority. None of that. I'd like for any of these liberals to explain to me, why is it even criminal what Harvey Weinstein did? Based on your worldview, how could there possibly be a problem with what Weinstein did? Isn't it survival of the fittest? The strong, the weak, natural selection, all of that? I mean, where do you people come off calling anything immoral? Bunch of morons. And then even on the right, or the so-called right, I don't think there's a right-left anymore. Did I say a right-left? I did. I don't think there's a right that really remains intact anymore, except on the very fringes of society, which is where I dwell. Out on the fringes, the lunatic fringe. someone who would actually say that adultery should be illegal. It's a lunatic fringe. Earlier in the month, I was watching Tucker Carlson, obviously because there was nothing else on. I had already seen the rerun of Ancient Aliens. That's the only reason anyone ends up watching Tucker Carlson. But he, and I don't know if he was kidding or not. At the time, it didn't sound like he was kidding. And this is the only thing I'm going to say about the Trump, Comey, Peter Strzok, the nonstop. Okay, so before I get into this with Tucker, what has happened to news? There's no news anymore. There's no news. All the major news networks constantly are covering one story, and that's the Trump collusion, the Comey, the is there anyone I missed? It's nonstop, 24/7. How and when did this happen? Is there nothing else happening in the world? I think there's important things happening in the world. I mean, I'll get to Korea. I mean, the North and South Koreans actually walked across the DMZ together, and you can't tune into the news and get a decent report on it because all the air is being sucked out of the room by James Comey and James Clapper and Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin and Peter Strzok and his texts, and it's just unbelievable. But I guess the ratings are big. The ratings are big. Just proving my point that most people are morons. Brain dead, empty skirts and suits who are just, they're lucky for the technological revolution, they'd all be dead. Just worthless, ignorant, stupid people. I'm so jaded and pessimistic now. You know what it is? I've been hanging around in airports. And you really get a feel for people in airports. And then I was in Philadelphia. Supposedly the city of brotherly love, that's not what I felt when I was there. What I felt in Philadelphia was the fear of being dropped naked into the jungle without a weapon. Terrifying. You can feel the tension in the streets with the homeless and the bums and the tents and the filth and the children begging, openly begging, just unbelievable. I mean, I've been to Bombay, India. Dreadful. But Philly is right there. I mean, Philly is right. I was in Fishtown. Just horrible. Unbelievable. What a. Anyway, and the tension in the grocery store, in the restaurant, in the convention hall, you can feel the tension of people who just hate each other. And they're just this far from open civil war. I mean, it's just a gilded, just barely holding back from the just bursting into open violence and bloodshed in the streets. Philadelphia. Just a dreadful city. Horrible. Now what I was going to... Oh, well, let me get back to Tucker Carlson, because he was calling for, as he's doing, as he always does, his nonstop coverage of the Trump collusion, Comey, and I'm forgetting somebody there, but big name that I... Can you think of all the names who are associated? Who is Donald Trump's, not Secretary of State, the chief law enforcement officer, would be the Attorney General, and Jeff Sessions. Oh. How could I forget his name? You turn on the radio, you will hear Trump, Comey, Sessions, Strzok within 10 seconds on any radio. It's just unbearable. Turn on any news, like Tucker Carlson the other day. He calls for a permanent independent counsel who should be, who works outside of the justice system and investigates everyone all the time. And I think he was serious. Anyway, Tuck, we already have that. It's called God. God works outside of the justice system. He's independent and he's there all the time. And he will have the last and final judgment. So don't freak out too bad, Tucker. But what I want to get to is what I've been seeing happen. Is that, you know, the saddest effect that the Trump presidency is going to have for all of you ignorant, bamboozled evangelicals who voted for him? The worst effect is that he's going to push conservatives further and further defending more and more gross immoral conduct, like with the stripper or the whatever her name was. Conservatives are Sean Hannity basically saying that so the guy, whatever, he hired a stripper, a hooker, you know, it's, that has nothing to do with his ability as a great, wonderful, awesome president. I have a story, I have an article. Tony Perkins, one of my favorite targets as a Republican hypocrite is Tony Perkins. Apparently conversations are underway about a potential gathering of evangelicals in Washington in the coming months. And apparently NPR put out a story about this meeting that could happen in June, that evangelicals are getting together to try to stem the damage from controversies surrounding the president and all the women that he's molested and abused while he was married, by the way, which I don't defend that. In fact, I think that disqualifies a man from leadership that he cheats on his wife. I think it has everything to do with his ability to do a job. There was a time in this country where if you cheated on your wife and it got discovered, you'd lose your job. Yeah. If you divorced your wife, you could lose your entire career. Yeah. But no. Now, Tony Perkins comes in. He says, wait, NPR's got this story saying that evangelicals are concerned with President Trump. Perkins says that's fake news. Uh-huh. Yeah. Actually, Perkins says that they're going to get together. He's hoping to corral 1,000 gullible evangelical leaders. And they plan to discuss what has happened on the shared issues of concern for evangelicals since January of last year. And he says the manufactured scandals du jour will not be a part. If the president wants to hire strippers, we are not going to discuss that. We're going to discuss how great he is. Is he the greatest? Is he a great president or is he the greatest president? Is he a pro-life president or is he the most pro-life president since George Washington? Tony Perkins, mouthpiece for the pro-family industry, says, quote, the media has not focused on the fact that Donald Trump and his administration have advanced the most pro-life policies since Roe v. Wade. The most pro-life policies since Roe v. Wade. Well, the way he structured that sentence, he makes it sound as if Roe v. Wade was a pro-life policy. And if you hold it up to Roe v. Wade, I guess you could say Trump is pro-life and that he hasn't actually performed any abortions himself. He's not done that. Tony Perkins goes on to give NPR a hard time. He says NPR is subsidized by taxpayer funding, and they're playing up the president's alleged affairs. Did you hear Tony Perkins say that? Alleged affairs. Uh-huh. Did he ever say that about Bill Clinton? No. Why? Because it was obvious that it was all true about Bill Clinton. Well, kind of like it's really obvious that it's true about Donald Trump. So, I mean, come on, Tony. By the way, Tony, Planned Parenthood is also subsidized by taxpayer funding. Both got millions and millions more dollars in the 2018 budget that your great, great, super great, awesome president just signed. Anyway, Perkins says Trump has been invited to take questions from evangelical leaders. We're going to have a 90-minute session. It's not clear whether any allegations about any misconduct will be discussed. No affairs. We haven't decided yet if we're going to bring up all the affairs. Well, let me tell you, Tony, I know you're not going to because you're a hypocrite. he says discussion of the affairs are not likely to come up. Perkins, he says that evangelicals' concerns aren't with the president, not with his personal alleged behavior. Has to throw that alleged in there. Come on, Tony, please. Evangelicals are not concerned with the president's alleged behavior, but with Congress's failure to put Trump's agenda into place. That's what evangelicals are concerned about. That's probably true. They're a bunch of airheads. Evangelicals, says Tony Perkins, are discouraged not because of the details dredged up, from the president's past, but from Congress's poor performance on promises made. The GOP's future depends on evangelicals remaining bamboozled and compromised. I'm sorry. No, Tony said the GOP future depends on evangelicals remaining enthused and engaged, which they will do even if the president is convicted of raping a woman in the Oval Office. The evangelicals will not abandon him. That's the one thing he can count on. Forget walking down Fifth Avenue and shooting someone dead, Mr. President. See, I wanted her real bad, and I was about to give in. And that's when she started talking about true love, started talking about sin. I said, honey, I live with you for the rest of my life. She said, no hugging, no kissing, until you make me your wife. My honey, my baby, don't put my love on no shelf. She said, don't give me no lines and keep your hands to yourself. It is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So glad to have you. I guess I will just leave all that aside. Now I'm going to go with the story I was actually going to open with. So things kind of got away from me there. Halfway through the show, I'm going to do the story I intended to open with. The Chicago White Sox played the Tampa Bay Rays recently at a Major League Baseball game. 974 fans showed up. 974 to a Major League Baseball game. The kids just don't care about baseball anymore. Neither do the adults. There were pictures of it all over the internet. It's just sad. It begs the question, you know, can anyone save Major League Baseball? I don't know. It's a tall order. We'll have to see. It's sad to see baseball dying, but, also, I think the White Sox are really bad. I think they're going to be really bad this year. Or at least they're not doing well so far. Earth Day. We had Earth Day recently. I, unfortunately, was not able to celebrate because I was working. They announced a neighborhood cleanup day in an Indiana neighborhood. And Indianapolis, even. All the hippies got together to clean up the neighborhood, and they found a body. Yeah. So a fitting tribute to Ira Einhorn, the founder of Earth Day, who, if you're not familiar with Ira Einhorn, he was a hippie type, free love, all of that, and murdered his girlfriend, stuffed her in a trunk. So anyway, they found a body there at the Big Earth Day cleanup in Indianapolis. No word on the cause of death, but we'll just move on. Oh, the Central American Caravan, I believe. Now, you remember, before I left, before I went off the air for so many long weeks there, I reported that I was on the air. I believe it was Easter Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. It was Easter Sunday the last time I was on the air. And I reported that the caravan intended to cross the American border on Easter Sunday. And I thought it might be happening right while I was right there on the show. I was checking the news feed. Well, the Central American Caravan arrived at the border yesterday. They're a little behind schedule. This is not going to do any good to dispel the common misconception that Latinos are somewhat slow and sometimes a little bit lazy. It's just not going to help with that ugly stereotype. They've arrived there, and apparently they're meeting lawyers there at the border, and that'll work itself out just fine. The founder of Burning Man, Larry Harvey, had a stroke. I've been watching this one, waiting to see if this bastard died yet. He hasn't. I don't know if he's comatose or what. People must not care too much about this guy because they announced he had a stroke. That was back on 2 weeks ago. the founder of Burning Man, had a straw. Are you guys familiar with Burning Man? You look it up. It's another one of these hippie free love, drug-infested pagan festivals these hippies and their children now do out in the desert. They take peyote, and it's just disgusting. Should be illegal. You shouldn't be allowed to have massive amounts of people covered in mud and filth and doing drugs publicly. But they do, and so the Burning Man Festival. Founder Larry Harvey hospitalized after a massive stroke. His prognosis is unknown. That was 2 weeks ago. Haven't seen a single report on Larry. And we assume he's still in a hospital bed in a coma or something, but none of the press apparently cares enough about Larry to follow up on his condition. I've been trying to follow up. I hate this guy, and I probably like him more than most of the people in the news media. It's weird. Oh, and then we have the famous gay rights lawyer, David Buckle, 60 years old, set himself on fire. Yes, in a park in Brooklyn, New York. He set himself on fire. They call him, the New York Daily News calls him a nationally known advocate for gay rights and the environment. Why do those two always go together? Because the one is completely unnatural. I mean, if you just look at the mechanics of what they do, it's not really environmentally sound. If they love the environment so much, why don't they observe what happens in nature where boys go with girls and girls go with boys and there's harmony and love and peace and everybody can say kumbaya? But for some reason, the deviants and the perverts are also the earth worshippers, and we know why. It's because they're sexually immoral, liberal, socialist, God-hating heathens. And so to worship the environment is to disrespect God. To defile one another physically is to disrespect God. And that's why all these things always go together. So for all of you people who ever thought that setting yourself on fire would get anyone's attention, it really didn't. I mean, has anyone in the audience even heard that this happened? Because he didn't just set himself on fire. He put a note in a basket next to him saying that he was, I doused myself in fossil fuel and started the fire as a metaphor for the destruction of the planet. And he actually burned himself to death in the park, this well-known homosexual deviant pervert. Here's what his note said. My early death by fossil fuel reflects what we are doing to ourselves, which I think he was talking about himself and his boyfriend. So anyway, the whole better to marry than to burn, that whole thing. Anyway, he says, I hope my death is an honorable death that might serve others. No, Dave, your death wasn't honorable. There's no such thing. And even though you set yourself on fire in the park thinking that the whole world would stop and notice, there was just basically a collective yawn. And, you know, one person tripped over you and then they scraped everything up and that was it. Buckle was a renowned lawyer who worked with the Marriage Project to legalize homosexual marriage. He was also an environmental activist with the New York City Compost Project. He used to go collect all of the wasted food at all the high-end restaurants and compost them to try to ameliorate the enormous amount of guilt he felt for defiling himself and whatever young men he defiled along the way. Yeah. So there. Set himself on fire. Okay, Finland. We go to Finland. This is from the Delusional Opulence file. Delusional Opulence. Yeah. For those of you who matriculated in the government schools, you have to go look up both of those words. Delusional Opulence. The Finns thought that they could give everybody a basic income, almost $700 a month. They gave to about 2,000 unemployed Finns, and that was supposed to motivate them to get jobs. Here we go. The story is from the BBC. 2,000 unemployed Finns are receiving a flat monthly payment of $685 as basic income. Some see basic income as a way to get unemployed people into temporary jobs. At which point everyone who can think says, really? Who thinks that? How is giving somebody free money going to motivate them to get a job? Can you elaborate on that? Is it what, reverse psychology? What? Well, Finland, this was a 2-year pilot scheme. I love the British. They still use the word scheme. Here in America, the term scheme is kind of sinister, right? But in Britain, a scheme is just any planned exercise that's administered. That's a scheme. Well, Finland's 2-year pilot scheme for basic income started in January 2017. It will not be extended after this year, as the government there is now examining other schemes. because they realized that giving people free money didn't work. So it's like I said earlier, never before have so many stupid people who would have never survived the demands of reality before the technical and industrial revolutions, never have so many of them survived into adulthood. And they're now in control and have the levers of power in government in Europe and across America. These are people who would have been washed out and they would have actually physically died. They would have never lived to inherit power. But because of the delusional opulence brought on by the industrial and technical revolutions, these people have survived into adulthood and now they're actually making laws, which is terrifying. Never before have the stupid remained alive long enough to have this kind of influence on society. And it's very destructive. Very destructive. So, all right. So anyway, the basic income, Finland has discovered it does not work. Shock. All right, now, let's, because we've been talking about delusional people and stupid people, there are still about 10% of the population that can think and actually do things positive for civilization. And many of them are in medicine. Listen to this. This is from the Real Science File. Doctors have long wondered, this is a story from USA Today. Doctors have long wondered why breast cancer patients are more likely to see their cancer spread within the first 18 months after surgery, lumpectomy or mastectomy. Well, a new study suggests that the wound healing that follows the surgery may trigger the spread of any remaining cancer. As the immune system works to heal, well, almost everyone who dies from breast cancer, by the way, and I did not know this, they're not killed by the initial tumor. They're killed by it's spread into other areas of the body. I did not know that. But apparently almost, that's almost everyone who dies from breast cancer, it's because it spreads. Well, this study suggests that as the immune system works to heal, it stops restraining cancer cells that have wandered far from the tumor. According to the study that was published this month in Science Translational Medicine, without this break on the cancer cells, those cells grow. It's the post-surgical wound healing response, provoking already disseminated cells to begin to grow into clinically detectable metastases. Wow. The immune system. Very, very powerful. This same study suggests that there may be a simple solution. Taking an anti-inflammatory drug. A few days of anti-inflammatory therapy kept the immune system break engaged in mice and prevented the spread. This is all very fascinating. As we begin to understand how the human immune system works, we've discovered that the immune system is so powerful that basically the only reason we get sick is because if the immune system took all of its heavy artillery out against any given microbe or disease, that it would kill the patient as well as the disease. So the immune system is not an ad hoc system conserved over millions of years by accidental evolution. It's obviously designed and very sophisticated. And I've got another story here. Should I just go right into this? How are we doing on time? All right. From the Real Science File, immunotherapy before surgery can help melt away tumors, limit or even stop the spread of tumors in cancer patients. This is from NBC. The Yale Cancer Center, Dr. Roy Herbst, says that the results of combining immunotherapy drugs with, these are drugs that actually amplify and work with the immunoresponse, or in some cases, navigate the brakes of the immunoresponse, these immunotherapy drugs. He says the results are so startling that it's likely every lung cancer patient should be given the option of immunotherapy before surgery. The doctor himself says, I've never seen progress move so fast. The results today are really a paradigm shift. This is in constructing drugs to assist and navigate and manipulate the immunoresponse. Immunotherapy helps the body's immune system fight off cancer by boosting immune system activity, uncloaking tumor cells, and the use of engineered immune system proteins that very specifically target tumors. So doctors are actually decoding the human immune system and figuring out how to use its power to cure cancer. And it's not an ad hoc accidental conservation of mechanisms over millions of years that happened by blind evolution, but it's a sophisticated design by a very sophisticated and very powerful designer. It's the Weekly Worldview. Oh, yeah, the hand claps. Go back up, yeah. Oh, yeah, you just can't get enough of the hand claps. I love those. kind of Joan, a little Joan Jett-ish there. Yeah, the hand claps. You just can't beat that. All right, let's go. So we just talked about immunotherapy and the fact that, well, if we can keep civilization from falling into the hands of the madmen, that we stand on the threshold of incredible advances in medical science. It's things that we would have thought were science fiction are going to become true within the next decade. That's just a fact. But that's if we can keep civilization from falling into the hands of the madmen. And for that, let's go back to Europe, where the parents of little Alfie, Alfie Evans, I've been following this story. I may have mentioned it before. I don't remember because I just found out about it. So Alfie, the case is reminiscent of the Charlie Gard case last year. Basically, the court ruled in February. So Alfie's sick. Alfie is sick, and he's probably only going to get sicker, and he's probably going to die. Now, you could say that about any one of us. But Alfie's case is a little more acute, and it's costing the British Health Service enormous amounts of money to keep Alfie alive. Or I should say it was costing. Because back in February, the High Court ruled that the hospital could remove Alfie's life support. And that was the High Court in Britain. And the European High Court of Human Rights also agreed that it was okay to remove life support for Alfie. Life support, by the way, for Alfie was food and water. Food and water. So his parents, Tom Evans and Kate James, don't ask me why they have different names. You're not allowed to ask about that anymore. The institution of marriage has been so utterly devastated and destroyed that you're not even supposed to notice that the kid's parents have two different last names. You're not allowed to mention that, McBurney. Shut up. Well, so for whatever reason, they have different last names, but they were battling to save Alfie's life because he's their son. They had a long-running battle with the Alder Hey Hospital in Liverpool to continue to keep him on life support. They lost that battle. His food and water was removed April 23rd, and Alfie died today, April 28th. He was He was deprived of water and food and starved to death. With utter and sheer disregard for the kid's parents and other people who would have taken care of this little boy. You see, the hospital couldn't let someone take him and give him food and water. And to a normal person, you can't comprehend that. If the hospital is upset that it's costing a lot of money to keep Alfie alive, why do they have to go to court to kill him if there's other people willing to take him and feed him? Why? Well, it's because of pride, you see. They must have control. And so they killed Alfie today. And there's another fellow on life support at Sebastopol Hospital in Reims. That hospital ruled that life support should be removed from patient Vincent Lambert. And that life support was ordered removed on April 19th. Vincent suffered severe head injuries in an automobile accident in 2008. The accident left him a quadriplegic. But certain doctors and his parents insist that he's not sick, he's not in a coma, he breathes unassisted, and all of his internal organs function normally. He just needs food and water. Despite this, the hospital ruled that continuing to feed and hydrate him constituted what the hospital called unreasonable obstinacy. Unreasonable obstinacy. I can't comprehend that. So the decision was taken by the hospital against the will of his parents. A letter sent to French President Emmanuel Macron. This week, Vincent's mother sent a letter to Macron before, this was last week, I'm sorry. Before Macron went to visit Trump, because Trump is so pro-life, everyone knows that Trump cares so much about the lives of innocent people. She hoped that Macron could speak. She says, "My son has been sentenced to death, Mr. Macron. His name is Vincent Lambert. He has a little girl. He is alive and he has committed no crime." I don't remember Macron and Trump talking about it or making a joint statement that Vincent should be allowed to live. And as far as we know right now, Vincent is being killed by the hospital. Despite the fact that these two stories made global headlines. And the Pope even said something. Now, the Pope didn't offer to take the kid into the Vatican and give him food and water, I don't think. But a lot of people did. A lot of people offered to pay for the care of these. But the hospitals, see, this is the problem with socialism, is that socialism demands that you obey. And it doesn't matter that you were willing to go outside of the administered system to help these people. You're not allowed to go outside the administered system because that undermines the credibility of the administered system. And before too long, people realize that the emperor has no clothes. And so they can't allow these people to live. They're willing to murder these people to cover up the failings of their evil, wicked, godless socialist healthcare system. And for that, they should be arrested and put on trial. And someday they shall be. Someday in this life or in the next. All right. Now, let's go to Washington, D.C. That was Europe. That's from the Decline and Fall file. And let's go to the Culture file in Washington, D.C., where conservatives, you remember I said earlier, conservatives are now defending the fact that the president hired a prostitute. And that he quite possibly molested a number of other women while he was married. Conservatives have rushed to the defense of the president and rushed to defend the fact that he paid a woman $100,000+ to shut her mouth about something completely immoral and something that none of these men who are defending the president, none of their wives would defend that. But they're falling all over each other to say how despicable it is that anyone should bring up the fact that you paid off some woman. It's just unbelievable. And then last week, they were defending this Ronny Jackson, the White House doctor who was, he was nominated to be the head of the Veterans Administration. Well, turns out he's writing prescriptions to everyone and their brother for Ambien and Provigil, which basically sleeping pills and speed. And so Republicans rush to defend the doctor who's writing prescriptions for everyone and their brother for sleeping pills and speed in the White House. And the doctor doesn't even deny it. I mean, he withdrew his nomination. And basically, this story from Politico says Ronnie Jackson's nomination has exposed the widespread use of sleep and alertness drugs. That's what they call them. Sleeping pills and speed. And the widespread use of drugs among government officials. So accidentally, because the Democrats hate Trump so much, they expose the fact that the White House doctor writes prescriptions to anyone who asks for sleeping pills and speed. And now the ugly underbelly of Washington, D.C. has been revealed that an awful lot of people there are on an awful lot of drugs almost all the time. Nearly a dozen current and former officials who were treated by Dr. Jackson while he worked in the Obama White House say that casual use of prescription drugs is an established fact of life at the highest echelons of government. I think I said this easily 20 years ago. I said I suspected that all these people in Washington are on drugs. Forget drug tests for welfare recipients. We should have drug tests for anyone who wants to go into high office in the government. And is that, yeah, that's lunatic fringe talk. You'd have to be crazy to think that governing officials should be tested to make sure they're not blowing out their minds on drugs, for crying out loud. All right. Now, speaking of Washington, D.C., drug addicts running the country. Here's an interesting one from the Justice File. These days, in a suburb of Chicago, if you're pulled over for suspected drunk driving and you're asked to take a breathalyzer test and you refuse, now the police can generate an e-warrant, an electronic warrant. Basically, they text a judge and they say, "Hey, Judge Smith, this guy seems like he's drunk and he will not take a breathalyzer." The judge responds electronically and issues an e-warrant allowing the police to take by force a sample from someone on the side of the road who they suspect of being a drunk driver. And I think that's great. I trust the cops enough that if they think somebody's drunk, if you refuse to take a breathalyzer test, to me that says you're guilty, right? It's like the Syrians and the Russians. Right, the Syrians and the Russians insist that the chemical attack, it wasn't the Russians, it wasn't the Syrians. They say it was probably other jihadists or Islamists. Well, then why wouldn't they let people go in and inspect? See, if you don't let people come in and inspect, we assume you're guilty, and then we're going to bomb you. Should I speak to the Syrian? Is that news too old to even address? The bottom line is, it really doesn't matter if Assad actually gassed his people. Unfortunately, he's put himself in a position where anything that happens over there because of events, he's going to get bombed. And it's unfortunate for whatever civilians may have been killed, but unfortunately, that's the way things are. When you draw a red line, you can't allow people to cross it. You can't even allow it to even look like they might have crossed it. And when the Russians said, "We're not going to let inspectors come in." I'm sorry, did I say the Russians? I meant the Syrians, but they're interchangeable. The Russians, the Syrians, the Iranians, they're all the same. When they said they won't let inspectors come in, why? We're going to set you up? Is that what you think? We're going to set you up? I mean, if things have gotten that bad, then the whole world is crazy and everyone's on drugs. Because anyway, you won't let us in. We're gonna assume that you're guilty and we're going to bomb you. That's all. And we're bombing you for more than just you. Yes. And it's moral to bomb Hafez al-Assad. Did I say Hafez? I meant his rat-faced son. I can't remember his name. Anyway, Assad, the rat-faced son of Hafez al-Assad. It's okay to bomb you to send a message to China and North Korea. It's okay. It's completely moral because you're a murderer and a dictator and a socialist and a murderer. Did I mention he's a murderer, a mass murderer? It's okay to bomb Assad anytime. All right. And it's okay for the cops to get an e-warrant. Critics of the, let me get back to the breathalyzer here. Critics counter that such tactics infringe upon constitutional rights. I didn't know we had a constitutional right to drive drunk. In fact, I thought we all pretty much agreed that that was a bad idea. All right, now, from the I wish I could kill these bastards file. I'm sorry. This is from the justice file. Two men were arrested in Denver.
Oh, gosh.
This is unbelievable. Two men accused of gang raping a 13-year-old girl were sentenced to probation. Tommy Williams, 20 years old, Clarence Williams, 19, were sentenced to a minimum of 10 years of sex offender intensive supervised probation with a maximum possibility of life on probation for raping a 13-year-old girl. Whoever designed or administers the justice system that allowed this to happen, they better be on drugs. That would be the only excuse. Obviously, your mind was completely blown out on drugs to say that two men who rape a 13-year-old should be allowed to live. But not only are they being allowed to live, they're being put on probation, and they're going to get sex offender intensive supervised probation. That's super double Dutch probation. And these are just two of the six suspects accused of assaulting this girl. The rest are awaiting a trial, and they're all being processed through the catch-and-release justice system at some point. The victim's grandfather was interviewed, and he was shocked by the sentence. He said, the six men, they gang-raped my granddaughter, and they're getting probation. He's shocked. The victim's grandmother said at sentencing that her granddaughter, the 13-year-old, may now never be able to have children because of the assault that was made on her by these filthy, disgusting animals. Well, if I were her grandpa, since they're not in custody, if I were grandpa, oh, by the way, you notice that this 13-year-old girl, there's no mention of a mother and father here. I'm not allowed to notice that. But the 13-year-old has no father and no mother at home. She's being raised by her grandparents. And we're not supposed to say anything about that. That's just the way things are. And every family is a good family. But I noticed, okay? I noticed that why is this 13-year-old girl in a position where she could be molested? It's because her family fell apart. The family is the hedge of protection against the vicious, evil outside world. God designed the family to protect the children. And when the family's been destroyed by sexual immorality and ubiquitous pornography and drugs and all of it that has destroyed the family, a young 13-year-old girl ends up vulnerable. And so I'm going to mention the fact that she doesn't have a mother or a father at home because it's one of the reasons she was vulnerable. It's no reflection on her as a person nor upon her grandparents. It is a comment on society in general. Anyway, if I were her grandpa, since these animals are not going to be in custody, I would find a way to supervise their probation. And it would be intensive supervision that I would exercise upon the probation of these animals who raped my granddaughter. They would get super sensitive, intensive supervised probation. I can't believe it. Makes me. All right. I think we're almost out of time, but I only have a few stories left. The state of Indiana. Listen to this. This is how. So if you were wondering if everyone is on drugs, I think everyone must be on drugs. Listen to this. It's just as my mom suspected. Everyone's on drugs. My mom always suspected that, and she was almost always right. The state of Indiana has adopted a new law that grants personhood to unborn children. That, right? You'd think that would be big news. I used to work back during the personhood movement when we were trying to change the law here in the state of Colorado. That was one of my life efforts. I devoted a lot of my time and effort to trying to change the law to recognize unborn human beings as persons so that they would be protected by the law and it would be illegal to murder them. Well, here Indiana has passed the law. The law, however, does not apply to legally obtained abortions. So they passed a law saying an unborn child is a person. Unless you want to murder her, then she's not. Unless you want to murder her legally. And we have a process for that. And if you're willing to go through that process, then this law does not apply to that little girl. The law will go into effect July 2018. All right. So let's talk about the law. First of all, the law never goes into effect. True law is always in effect. Law is the law. The reason you call it a law is because it is a law. It is always in effect. Second, true law applies at all times and in all cases. Any law that's written in any other way is no law at all. Law, by the way, is not something that we can just make up and define. Laws exist, and we are all constrained by the real laws. Take the law of gravity, for example. Doesn't matter if you don't want it to be in effect. It doesn't matter if a judge rules it unconstitutional. It's still in effect because it's a real, true law. Just like the law against murder. The law against murder never went out of effect. It's always in effect in all cases. Doesn't matter what this judge says. It doesn't matter what Mike Pence might have signed to throw a bone to conservatives. I shouldn't blame Mike Pence. He's left Indiana. But this is a result of Mike Pence, this law. We're going to have a personhood law so that we can bamboozle the evangelicals into voting for us, thinking we're pro-life, but we're not going to make it apply to legally obtained abortions. Well, true law applies at all times in all cases, and it's always in effect. And for politicians to think that they can define personhood situationally are in for a rude awakening at some point in this life or in the next. And the only excuse they could have for this is that they were on drugs. And then they would still be punished. We just take their drugs away. And then they would be punished. All right, CBS News reports. 40% of millennials are unaware of the Holocaust. This is reason number 1,132 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Uh-huh. Oh, and now let's, all right, we're going to have to close because my extremely attractive audio engineer, well, she has chores. I told you about the new chickens. I told you about the ducks. Yeah. So let's go to the culture file where you heard about the van attack in Canada. So reporters say the killer in Canada's latest van attack had a lot of Facebook postings referring to the incel rebellion. The incel rebellion. And that's a reference to another killer in Canada who killed 14 people in 2014 by ramming them all with a vehicle. He called himself an incel, as did this most recent murder, and I hate to use their name, so I'm trying not to. Incel, that's spelled I-N-C-E-L, is a label referring to the involuntary celibate who have failed to make a connection with members of the opposite sex. So this connects these two murderers who both have either Facebook postings or the first one wrote an entire manifesto about being this involuntary celibate person, about his failure to find a girlfriend, and his hatred of those who had succeeded. A Facebook message confirmed as genuinely related to this latest mass murderer says, quote, "The incel rebellion has already begun. We will overthrow all the Chads and Stacys." Chads and Stacys are what these type of creeps call normal people. Anyway, so this is... So this is terrorism, but not for any grand political scheme or religion or anything else. This is just self-loathing and hatred. And this is what I would warn all of you is the expected product of the pop culture public school complex. If you have a pop culture that worships glorified sexual immorality, and you have a public school that teaches children that there is no God, with enough time and enough children processed through that system, you're going to end up with young men like this. Young men who have failed to live up to the lie from the pop culture and the public schools. They didn't fit into any of the cliques. They weren't able to molest any of the girls. They weren't able to turn queer and become cool in that way. And they're just, they're utter misfits. And they have no morality. They have no God. They have no sense of future or potential. And now that we are four generations in some places, into this public school pop culture complex, the products being produced no longer just slash tires or start fires. They commit mass murder. And this is only going to get worse. This will only get worse unless something shatters the pop culture public school complex and convinces people to wake up and maybe put away the drugs and take responsibility for raising their children in the fear and the admonition of the Lord. That's it for the Weekly Worldview, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at Denver Bible Church, and American Right to Life, and of course my other brother Darrell, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.